Welcome to the Secrets of the Lac Nus Selu Trail podcast. Hear from Chris Stowers and Danny Wenchikoy on the behind-the-scenes experience of making the documentary.
Hello, everyone. 大家好，我是 Wenchikoy. I'm the radio host and the travel writer in Taiwan.
Hi, everyone. 大家好. I'm Chris Stowers. I'm a photographer, an English photographer based in Taiwan. And we will share our experiences along the Lac Nus Selu Trail on this podcast.
Yes.
Lac Nus
is very important, right? Yes, because right before we joined in this documentary, we have no idea what is Lac Nus, and also have no idea how to pronounce this word.
Yes, it's written, it's written in English as Racnus. So that's how I was saying it, but many people didn't understand what it was I was trying to say.
Fun fact, Lac Nus is the term used by the Saisha and Atea tribes to refer to camphor tree, and Selu means small path in the Hakka language.
Even though all Hakka people living together, but we spoke a different kind of accent.
Quite a lot of different accents.
Yeah. One thing I think is very in common is called 谢谢, which means thank you, right? Yeah. So why don't we do this as three different accents? Okay. Are you ready?
I remember one I liked. I'll tell you why later on.
But first one from the 新竹海陆腔, which means is a Shimongi. Yeah, this one is from
area.
My area. It's Shimongi from Xinzhu. Okay. Second one is from the Miaoli.
Right. This is the main or the more popular.
Right now, it's the
accent
most.
Right now.
Yeah, the most popular Hakka accent in Taiwan.
Okay.
It's a Anzise.
And to say,
it's totally different. Meaning, but totally different.
And this is how far is Xinzhu from Miaoli?
It's right close.
It borders it. Maybe one mountain in the way. Totally different.
Yeah, one is Shimongi, the other one is An Zi Se. But you know what? Following by the Taichung, that's another one called Da Pu Qiang.
And this one I know, I remember.
This one you know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, called Lola.
Lola. Short and sharp and sweet.
Yes. Yeah, okay. So let's repeat after me. Okay. One more time. It's from the 新竹海陆腔. Shimongi. And second is from the Miaoli 四线腔. An Zi Se. Last one is from the 台中大埔腔. Lola. Okay, well, you've done very good.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. You're very polite. You're very kind. Hakka people are very kind.
Thank you.
Fun fact, the Hakka Chinese language has five main dialects. There are two dialects that are most prevalent in Taiwan, the Suxian dialect and the Hailu dialect.
Chris, why don't you take this opportunity to explain what is Lac Nus mean?
Okay, well, Lac Nus is... This is one part of the name of the trail that is actually derived from indigenous languages, from the Daya and the Saisha tribes. And this refers
to... Two different tribes,
yes, living in mountainous areas. And this refers to the camphor, the wood, the tree, specifically the tree that used to grow naturally in Taiwan, huge... camphor trees. Remember we saw a photograph, didn't we?
That was
a 1920 picture from National Geographic, right?
That one is like a late Qin Dynasty, right? I was so shocked.
Well, I was blown away by the size of the tree. You had the people working inside the tree trunk, chiseling away the wood, which is used as it's a scented wood. So it was used at that time for perfumes, mostly, wasn't it? But the fact that you could get like a row of about 10 people chiseling away inside the trunk of the tree. And now, you remember the trees? We saw the camphor trees there. They're not quite so big anymore.
No, it's different. Totally different. Yes.
About two feet across.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, nowadays, you know, because the camphor, this industry is it's a little bit... small, let's put this way. But it's more variety, right?
Modern chemicals have now taken over and you don't need camphor so much. However, there was still some industry there, wasn't there? There was a camphor factory we visited and they were keeping alive. In fact, they were finding that there was a resurgence of popularity. People have had enough with chemicals and they want to go back to natural products.
Right.
So, you know, they're making anything from soaps and shampoos to even pest control. What you imagine, you think of it, you can make it with using camphor. It's quite amazing.
I'm so grateful, they still have, because the last time I went there, I bought a small bottle.
Yeah, bottle of, what did you buy? The camphor oil itself?
It's only the camphor oil. Yes. It's like a made me calm, like a pigment. Yeah.
Some of it here.
You still have this one?
It smells
like, yeah.
It smells
it's
like,
so natural.
It smells like my grandmother's furniture.
The camphor industry was a major economic activity for the early settlers in northern and central Taiwan. Given camphor's many uses, it became a profitable industry.
So would you say it's true that the camphor came before the tea? So you had camphor first.
Camphor first, then tea. Then tea,
and
yes.
Nowadays, what do people make their money from along the trail?
Well, they change a lot, as you know, there because civilization. So that's why there's a lot
of people growing, living there now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Good thing is, we still find that some, people still continuing carrying their tradition, family traditions, and making the tea a special tea. Yeah. Remember that one?
Well, Mr. Chen, right?
Mr. Chen, his
tea plantation. It wasn't very high, was it? It was maybe 200, 300 meters.
No.
And I remember when we arrived and you could see the mist in the valley, in the distant valley. It was early morning. It was
that's
beautiful.
One thing for me, it's so memorable because, as I mentioned that, my childhood, I spent before the preschool, I was in the mountain in Beibu with my grandparents. So every morning, I remember that when I woke up, just walk out the door, I see the mountain, the layer, and the mist exactly looked like that. Nowadays, you can't. So every time when I travel around the world, when I got a chance to see the sunrise, every time when I see that kind of picture, I always remind me my childhood in the Beibu. And this time we were so lucky because at first I was thinking about, oh my God, so early. Why should we need to go there so early? Yeah. But
It's the magical time.
Yeah, that was so grateful.
So there's interesting things about that tea plantation because Mr. Chen himself had worked in Hsinchu Science Park for many years doing a totally different job.
Especially in Hsinchu, this area, I would say there is a majority of people, when you finish your education, pretty much everyone go to the Hsinchu Scientist Park.
Yeah, you get good money. Steady job.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But he seemed to really miss that. And not only for himself. I mean, he said that he missed his childhood. That's why he wanted to go back. But he also wanted that kind of childhood for his own children.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they maybe don't realize how lucky they are to have a dad like that. Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing. When he talk about the environment, it's really touching, because nowadays everyone to still use it's easy to get the chemical, right?
Yeah.
So that's why. But the special tea in Hsinchu, which is you cannot use the chemical at all because it's based on the, little bug.
We weren't there exactly at the right time for the bugs. We tried to find one. Apparently, there are normally millions of them.
No.
But we found one, didn't we?
Yes.
And I got a shot before it jumped away. I did get a shot of it, actually. That was quite a challenge for the photographer at that time in the morning. Mm-hmm. To wake up and find a bug. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tiny little thing. So that tea you're talking about, even I've heard of that tea because there's a connection with England.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. It's Dongfang Mei Ren Cha.
Dongfang Mei Ren Cha.
Yes,
so
Oriental
the,
Beauty. Yeah. But in Hakka, we don't say the Dongfang Mei Ren Cha. We say Pong Feng Cha.
Okay.
Pong Feng Cha.
So yes. That means something different, though. That's nothing to do.
Something different, yes.
So the Oriental Beauty, that was actually in relation to Queen Victoria from England, correct?
That's true, yes.
Because she liked that tea.
Well, that's a story people all talk about.
How did that story
come
about?
Yeah. I have no idea because, when I grew up, it's already heard about this story. But that's the time period is people really don't talk about that because the industry pretty much the gone. But recently, this kind of specialty is coming back very strongly because the quality is really good. Yeah, even though it's quite pricey, but nowadays you don't see this kind of quality, especially with the organic.
It's all totally hand cropped, isn't it? He's cutting the weeds and leaving some weeds. It's quite overgrown plantation, right? But that was on purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, for me, it's like so happy to when we went down there. You know, I was taking a photo and then sent to my mom. I said, "Hey, Ma, take a look. This is a tea plantation in the Beibu." My mom was like, "Oh," she started laughing because she said, "Oh, you had no idea. When I was the lady, you know, I was young girl, back in that time, you know, every day I had to walk to like 1 and 2 hour, go to school, then coming back. And, you know, just like no time for the homework. We all have to go to the tea plantation to pick
and
up the
carry
tea.
On working after
yeah,
school.
So that's why for her, she said at that time, that's a nightmare. Yeah. But nowadays, so different. So she can talk about, you know, old days, something like that.
She's a living link to the past.
Yes.
Because in many ways, not every child is so lucky as the boys of Mr. Chen, who grew up living on that farm. Many are living in the city. They're disconnected, not only from that kind of countryside living, but from their Hakka culture as well.
Mm-hmm. And also, on the other hand, remember that we went there, because at this time we do is a documentary, it's called Lakanus Selu, which means this trail is along with all like tea bed. But in the old day with the tea industry, and the camphor industry. Mm-hmm. And imagine at that time, you know, they was living in the mountain. Mm. And when they finished all this tea, they had to carry on all this tree, followed by this trail and go down to the town and the selling.
Even today, remember, it was quite difficult to get up to Mr. Chen's farm. And that's today. So you can imagine 100 years ago, everything would have to be transported by foot,
right?
And you know, on swinging poles all the way down into the valley. That's why tea was such a prized commodity. Yeah.
Fun fact: Oriental Beauty Tea is one of the most famous oolong tea from Taiwan. It is said that when Queen Elizabeth II tasted it, she loved this tea for its unforgettable taste, and subsequently, the tea was named after her.
This is such a good opportunity because, be honest, you know, when I was a kid, I living over there, and when I grow up, I already move out. So the memory is still just in when I was a kid. But this time, when you go back there, it's totally different. But the good thing is, like, wherever I go, remember that.
No,
people remember
you,
me.
Or your mother.
We remember my family. We remember my mother. Well, I was like, wow.
And what was your relative who had the hotel? And people remember staying in his hotel.
Yes, that's another thing. That's, to me, is very important because my grandpa used to have the hotel in the Zhudong, which is in the town.
It's in Hsinchu, right?
No, in the Hsinchu County. Mm. But at the time, Zhudong is like a town center.
Yeah,
everything's happening in the Zhudong. So those the people who had the tea or like indigenous people, you know, they come to the town, they need to find a place to stay. They will stay in the grandpa house. Uh-huh. Yeah, grandpa's hotel.
Why would they stay in his hotel and not any other hotel?
Well, at that time, because it's a pretty much like during the Japanese period they try to I won't say control, just like, you know, they only allow few, you know, like a
movement of people.
Yeah, like a few hotel they can,
few hotels,
that the, you know, indigenous people stay.
Right, so the Aboriginal indigenous people could not stay wherever they wanted at that time.
No, that's
what
right.
What about the Hakka people? Could you?
Yeah,
also,
Hakka's
you
okay.
could move more freely at that time, could you, around.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's why I was so touching. Remember, we went to Miaoli.
Yeah.
We saw the Saixia, Mr. Do.
Saixia tribe.
He's like 78 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start to talk about Zhudong,
that's right, he'd actually.
Yeah, I was so surprised that he asked Kimmy about the Hakka. Mm. I was speak the Hakka with him. I was like, wow, you know my Hakka very well. Mm. And he said, yeah, because when I was young, you know, I walk in at the, you know, Zhudong, that's why. Right. And I remember I stayed in the one hotel in the nearby the market. I was like, Wait a minute. It's just down to the market. And he said, oh, yeah. And he still remembered the last name, same as my last name. So when I was like, oh, wow.
It has to be, because your family name is quite rare, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's something different. Yeah. So I'm so grateful I have this opportunity to join in this documentary.
It kind of verifies and puts the picture together, doesn't it? Mm. I remember when we were in the field of Mr. Chen, we also found it was like a gravestone. And okay, there was like a family shrine, which is very well tended. Mm-hmm. But then there was this one odd gravestone that had been pushed over and was just lying there on the ground. And I thought, oh, that's a bit disrespectful. But you mentioned to me, maybe a reason behind
you know
that, right?
For me, that's another thing I learned, you know. In the past, I have no idea about this story at all. I would say that like a very traditional Hakka culture, they were saying that it's like for the Hakka culture, you always to need to remember who you are. Mm-hmm. So whatever you go, doesn't matter how far you move, family always with you together. So you always have to carry on with everything with the family. So the one of the thing is like a family tree. So you see, we normally put in the book, written down everything and carry on. And secondly, you will see that whatever you go to the house, remember I was pointing that they have
a plaque over the top of the door.
Yeah, they have that, they have said that like my family is a Tai Yuan Tang, which means like when you see this Tai Yuan Tang, you knew this is first is identified as a Hakka. Second, you knew these people, the original is from the Sanxi Tai Yuan. So we always, you know, our Hakka culture is a teacher.
It's
like
rooted in that.
Yes, you like have
how many
remember.
How many generations back is that?
More than 1,000 years, you know.
But are you unusual in that you can trace your family back a thousand years, or can every Hakka do this?
Not necessarily every Hakka, but my family, we are really, you know, like
You're serious
about this. So my family, the books still have it, so we can track back to the like a Tang Dynasty, something like that. I was quite amazing. Also, one time I just followed this book. You know, I went to the mainland China go to the
tried to track down.
Exactly. I went to the Canton first, and then move to the Jiangxi, then go to the Sanxi.
So you're
just follow
reversing
by the
route.
Yes, and I find exactly where we came from.
Wow. Yeah. So that was what I didn't understand at first about the gravestone we saw.
Yeah.
Because it had three characters on the top, and I thought, oh, well, that's someone's name, three characters. Mm-hmm. But it's not. The central character was the family name.
Yes.
And then on either side of it was the two characters of the place name where the family originated from. Mm-hmm. So now whenever I look at this, I really do see differently.
So you learn some Hakka culture.
But
secondly, remember that we was asking him, like, why this gravestone in here and also the broken?
A section of the stone was broken off at the bottom.
It's doing on the purpose. Because all the like Hakka people, you know, they say whatever you go, you have to carry the ancestors with you together.
Yeah.
So that's why original this Mr. Huang, you know, their family, you know, because
the
I saw
the
gravestone, the Mr. Huang, Mr. Huang family, they already moved out. Mm. So that's why when they move out, you know, they talk to the ancestors. They say, you know, we're going to move to the, for example, move to Taipei somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So that's why please come with us, you know. So when they just pray to the ancestors will answer to them. So when answer to them, so they will start doing that. Okay, now I'm going to carry you out. So I'm going to break the gravestone, which means you're no longer living here.
To that place.
Yeah.
But then they took, because the section of stone at the bottom had a kind of a story written, but you couldn't follow the whole story because they took sections. So it's like a secret. They've taken the secret section. Nobody will actually know the story of the family apart from the people who originally made that stone.
Yeah.
Right?
So see, this is a very interesting about the Hakka culture. Even though for me, I've been studying for the more than like 15 years, I don't know this kind of, you know, tradition at all. So this time when we joined this documentary, the filming, you know, it truly made me feel like I need to study more. And also I'm so grateful I know a lot about who I am and also from my Hakka heritage. And also for the cultural value.
The religious practices of Hakka people are largely similar to those of other Han Chinese. Ancestor veneration is the primary form of religious expression.
I enjoyed photographing the people we met along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Many have very interesting faces. I don't know whether you could say there's a Hakka style of face. You know, I've lived in Taiwan on and off for many
years.
Be
honest, it's very difficult to tell.
See people, can you say, oh, you're definitely Hakka?
You know what? Not at all. But one thing I can definitely identify, this person is a Hakka.
What's that?
When they speak the accent.
Oh.
You know, for example, like Hakka people is very interesting. Yeah. Even though for me, you know, well, be honest, when I speak the Mandarin, every time when I get excited, when I speak the Mandarin, I will with the Hakka accent.
You can't help yourself.
But only Hakka people, they can identify. Yeah. They say, oh, Danny, well, he's Hakka. Yeah.
It amazes me that people are still so, that they're so shocked to find.
Yeah.
Because Kerjaren, which is the name that even Hakka people call themselves, it means like a guest. Person? Mm-hmm. Or how would you explain it?
About this, it's like we have to like get back to the history.
Yeah,
you know, originally we are from the center
of
center of the China, but time to time we're moving.
Mm.
So when we move, we always think about one day we have to go back. So that's why when people ask you where you guys came from, we say, oh, we're from the center.
Mm.
So people are thinking, oh, you are the guest. So that's why in the Chinese world, it's a ke, which means a guest.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, but
you don't mind being called that? For even though you've been settled here for many generations.
No, normally, okay, I would say that 200 years ago, you know, people don't call ourselves is a Hakka. Because then at that time, people were thinking about when we call ourselves is a Hakka, is we kind of like this, you know, respectful for our cultural ancestors.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Right, right.
But, you know, for the, I would say the political issue or some other issue. So we start to recognize, yes, we are Hakka. You have to back to like a Ming dynasty, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, stuff on that. Yeah, we start to call ourselves as Hakka.
Right. I think people are pretty proud to be called Hakka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you hear Kerjaren more often spoken, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I really want to ask you.
Yeah.
It's like you've been living in Taiwan for several years, right?
Yes.
So you know Taiwan a lot.
Mm.
So what about a Hakka?
Well, I thought I knew Taiwan pretty well. And I guess I do it around the edges. And certainly Taipei I knew pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But not the central area.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for this trail that cuts right through the foothills of basically following National Route Number 3 down the west coast, but inland in the foothills, that area I'd never really explored before.
So this time for you, it's the first time?
It's all hidden, isolated valleys. So every section of trail, every village seems to be cut off from the other one. Even though the trail links them together, it's incredible how many different styles of landscape and culture that you find along the way.
Mm-hmm. So before you come to Taiwan, do you know Hakka at all?
No, only from my travels in China, where I met Hakka people in Fuzhou, Guangdong province.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really understand what was. I heard the term.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people take me to a Hakka restaurant. But honestly, I had trouble to define what was different from Hakka food and normal Taiwanese food or Chinese food. Now I look at it very differently after these 10 days on the Lacandon Seilu Trail, for sure.
That's very good. Yeah. Okay. You know what? I think it's a time for us to say goodbye. Yeah. It's just like old saying, you know, time flies when you're having fun,
I know. Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to thank everyone for listening in on this. I hope you've learned something about the secrets of the Lacandon Trail on this podcast.
Yes. So see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Don't miss the next episode on YouTube, Spotify, Shock App, audio by SPH, or on ICRT Radio. Thank you for listening to the Secrets of the Lacandon Seilu Trail podcast.